Welcome to another edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. John Schmelk, Lance Meadow, Jeff Fiegels.
The fearless threesome.
Three guys stuffed behind a small desk.
Yes.
201-939-4513. We'll be with you. We got a short week here because it's the bye week, so we figured try to get everybody on as much as possible. Kind of talk about what's been going on so far this season. So we got the three of us today taking your calls and looking at your tweets at hashtag Giants Chat. And guys, obviously a disappointing 24-7 defeat. They were in the game for a while, but in the second half, Jeff, this thing just seemed to get away a little bit.
Penalties. Listen, I think that going into the fourth quarter, 10-7, Giants had a chance. And really, when I say penalties, it's you can go in hindsight and say that field goal by Rosas would have been good from 42, but the penalty by Bobby Hart there puts you back to the 47-yard. And, I mean, that was a big play in the game, a big momentum play, because this team, you think about the Seahawks, they tried to give the game to the Giants yesterday. They really did. All their penalties in the first half, they were racking up total yards, was incredible, but the fact is they weren't getting in the end zone. And really, they tried to give the game. The Giants then blow that field goal, and then from there on out, guys, it turned ugly. It really did.
And Lance, we spoke about this on the post game show too. That the inability to convert three relatively third and manageables in the first half. They had a 3rd and 6, a 3rd and 2, and a 3rd and 1.
Yeah.
And the Giants failed converting all three of those in the first half. And then combine that with the fact that Giants defense could not get the Seahawks off the field on 3rd down. And the eventual result was them losing the time of possession battle 35-25. It was actually a little bit worse than
significant.
That. And you put all those things together. The Seahawks, as Jeff said, played terribly in the first half, but the Giants only got 7 points out of it, and that's how you got to where we are.
Yeah, I think Jeff hit it right in the nose. It's so lopsided, but the score didn't reflect the lopsidedness in terms of total yardage, in terms of time of possession, in terms of rushing yards. Remember, Seattle, early in the game, goes on a 16-play drive, and they milked, nearly 9 minutes off the clock.
And they had about 12 plays inside the 20-yard line.
Because of all the penalties,
correct,
that the Giants picked up, and they decide to go for it on 4th and goal from the 1. Jimmy Graham completely drops the pass. I know Eli Apple was defending him, but Jeff, it went off his chest and right through his hands.
Oh, so, Thomas Rawls was dropping passes.
Yeah.
Everybody was jumping off sides. There was tons of stuff there for the Giants to take advantage of. I actually thought the fourth down stop there on the goal line, that was going to be kind of that momentum that you like to get into. Like, okay, here we go. Defense made another goal line stand, and that's the momentum. You can ride that and take the drive down the field. But I will tell you this, guys. I don't care what NFL football team you are, when you have a depletion of the receivers that you do. I know that they're NFL receivers because they're on an NFL roster, but reality is reality. That these guys are practice squad guys, okay? There's no symmetry between them and Eli. There's not a lot of, there's things that they can't run in the football game because they're handicapped. And what I mean by handicapped is that the fact that they're just new. They're young. They don't understand the game at that level. We could talk all you want about going into preseason and those guys playing in preseason, but we all know that, is there ever a game plan in preseason? It's just go run a play. And so now when you get into the nuts and bolts of formations and reading coverages and option routes, all that kind of stuff with young receivers, it really handicaps your offense, and it's showing.
And again, the Giants tried to run the ball because of that depletion
Absolutely.
Of wide receiver in the first half, and they did okay. I mean, it wasn't great. They weren't getting 6-7 yards a pop, but I'll go through the rushing plays. There frankly weren't that many of them because the Giants didn't have the ball a whole lot. Darker's first run of the game went for 4 yards. His next run went for 2. His next run went for 3. They're not great, but you can live with those numbers. His next run went for 6. His next run went for 2. But then on the 3rd and 2, he only gained 1 yard, and that was one of those killer plays that we talked about. Later on, Wayne Gallman's first run, 3 yards. Shane Vereen's next run, 6 yards. Then on the 3rd and 1, Gallman could not convert the 3rd and 1. He was stopped short, and frankly, that was it. Because they couldn't convert those 3rd downs, you couldn't get that running game sustained. And look, you're not going to win Super Bowls rushing for 3.5 yards per carry, but you can put yourself in a decent enough position on 3rd down if you're rushing for 3.5 yards per carry
manageable.
To do it.
What do you always ask for? Positive yards on 1st and 2nd down to get in manageable 3rd downs. You got your manageable 3rd downs, but when you can't execute and you can't have options to throw two receivers that will catch the football, look at the targets out of the receivers yesterday. They tried to throw the ball to the young guys. They really did. I think it was 12 to 15 targets, and they only had 5 receptions. So yeah, I saw guys can, you know, you got to have the ability to get off of the defenders, create some separation, and give Eli a chance to throw the ball where it's at. There was guys, the ball's hitting guys in the hands, dinking off guys' shoulder pads. That is what you call inexperience.
And guys stopping routes, too, at some point in time.
Another
not
thing.
Finishing routes.
And that's just all about experience, okay? And so they don't know where the safety is. They don't know where the linebacker is. They're stopping their routes. Eli Manning is a grizzled veteran. He understands he could throw a slant in his sleep to know that where these guys are pre-snap read, I'm going to put the ball here.
And I'll go right through it, Lance, before you go here. Tavares King, 3 targets. And I know he's been in the league for a while, but he just doesn't have a ton of snaps, okay?
But when you say for a while, I mean, it's...
I mean, look...
He's been in a variety of teams,
yeah,
too.
4-year pro, so. But he's been on the practice squad for a lot of those years.
Sure.
So 3 targets for him, 1 catch. 6 targets for Roger Lewis, 1 catch. 6 targets for Travis Rudolph, 3 catches. So you're right, Jeff. That's 15 targets for the Giants' 3 top wide receivers with only 5 receptions. That's a terrible percentage. And, you know, Lance, once they got behind in this game... I'm not going to say one score, but once they got behind 2 scores in the second half and they had to throw it, that was pretty much all she wrote.
Well, remember, it's the complete opposite of what happened last Sunday. They led from start to finish, right? So the percentage played right into their hands. They were able to run more than they had to pass. Now look at the numbers this week, by the way. Eli Manning attempted about double the amount of passes that he had in Denver. 39 times he threw the football. Technically, he dropped back 40 because he was sacked once and then loses a fumble, by the way, which gives up favorable field position to Seattle, and they capitalize on the touchdown. So, I mean, it was the complete opposite of what we saw a week ago. And, you know, you were talking about the targets to the wide receivers. I'm not making excuses for the wide receivers, but notice the first 2 games that this group had to go up against, Aqib Talib, Chris Harris,
yeah.
Richard
Sherman. The no-fly zone in the Legion of Boom.
I mean, correct. Yeah. Which you adopted in the pregame show yesterday,
exactly.
As we continue to throw out more labels. But and it's not going to get any easier the rest of the season.
It will get easier.
To a certain degree, but I don't want...
It will get a little bit easier than the Seahawks and Broncos, okay? I mean, it's going to be easier than that.
But I guess my point is the narrative shouldn't become, well, now all of a sudden they're going up against subpar secondaries.
Correct.
And the separation should be there. You know, Josh Norman's still on the schedule, who I think is a respectable corner. Philadelphia has dramatically improved in terms of their secondary with the addition of Ronald Darby. They are going to be challenged, this group moving forward.
And, you know, here's the thing. It was almost the exact opposite, Lance. And you mentioned the split run and pass. Last week against Denver, Jeff, 32 rushes, 22 dropbacks because Eli was sacked 3 times in that game, okay? So it was a 32-22 run-to-pass ratio. This week, it was a 17-40 run-pass ratio. So it was not only flipped, it was even worse after you flip it than it was last week. And again, that's the product of the score. And that's when we spoke about this last year, Jeff. I know me and Lance had this long conversation late in the week. The reason they had the success against the Broncos, especially with the offensive line protecting the quarterback, was a product of how the game went. He only had to drop back 22 times. He could do short drops. He didn't have to go back 5 or 7 step drops and go down the field.
Yeah.
You're leading in the game. And then we saw in the second half, not just the receivers not getting open, then all of a sudden what? Eli's getting harassed. Eli's getting stripped. And the one strip sack they had, by the way, very similar to the play they had towards the end of the game 2 weeks ago against San Diego. It wasn't a twist or a stunt, but DJ Fluker makes it, at least what it looked like he made a mistake in pass protection. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe the game film will, you know, tell the coaches something different. But from our eyes, not being in the coach's room, it looked like he abandoned his spotted guard to help Bobby Hart at tackle. Brett Jones could not sustain his block, and all of a sudden it's a free runner at Eli. He gets stripped, and then that was the final nail. Once that happened, that was pretty much all she wrote.
And if you also look at what happened in the Denver game, a couple things. Number one, you have a lead. You scored on your first possession. You have a lot of confidence going throughout that game. Okay, this game here, you have the mentality of when a team gets down and you're at that point 1-5, right? Or what was their record coming into this game? I'm sorry.
1-5. Yeah, you're right.
Your mentality is, oh, God, here we go again. And you start pushing, and you're trying too hard on certain things. Okay, last week they had the lead the whole game. They had a running game going. They were playing that complementary football, that term that we've been looking for forever. This week, nobody was complimentary to anybody. Okay, they didn't have a lead. And the other thing is, I said it right at the top of our show. In the fourth quarter, it's 10-7. You could see by the middle of the fourth quarter, the defense was gassed. There were guys running after, and the time of possession caught up with this team, okay? And this team could not hang with the Seahawks in the last seven and a half minutes of this football game. There were some plays where Russell Wilson is outside, or even a running back. The guys couldn't catch him. They were gassed. And the problem is that when you have a team like this that is not winning, it's very tough in your mind when you're on the sideline thinking, you know what, we haven't won any games like this before. Why are we going to win this one? I mean, I'm not telling you that's what the guys are thinking. I'm just saying it happens like this. I've been on bad teams, and you could just feel it around. It's like we just want to get out of this and get into our bye week. And what a great time for a bye. Just go home and get away and come back and just kind of figure it out. We had a question on our post game show in the coaches club last night. Somebody asked me about, you know, do you bring in wide receivers now, the veteran guys, because it's the bye week? And my answer was like, well, they're out there for a reason. And okay, and so what are you trying to see about these guys now? You're 1-6. You're now into a developmental phase. Okay, we got to start evaluating who's on our own roster rather than go get some stopgap receiver that can maybe can't even get off the line of scrimmage.
Well, plus Sterling Shepard's going to come back. So
that's
going to
be
you
a huge
look at it through that lens as well.
Now, it's not going to solve all the problems.
No, but you're
going to
get somebody back. Correct. I mean, we can't make it seem like nobody else is going to return at some point.
And I got to believe, and I think you both will agree with me, is that Roger Lewis is not a number one receiver. Sterling Shepard certainly could be in that class as a number one receiver.
Somebody that could draw attention.
Well, here's the question, though, Jeff. How are they going to use him? Is he going to play outside when he gets back? And maybe that will reduce some of his effectiveness, or will they leave him in the
slot?
That's
a good question.
I think that's a tough decision for the coaching staff, too, because, you know, as an offense, you want that X receiver that's going to draw extra attention and do all that stuff. But is Sterling Shepard better in the slot than taking him away from his strength?
I think the answer to your question is, where do they want to play Ingram?
I think they move them both around, though, right? Haven't they
Absolutely.
Moved them around? When did they move Shepard?
Well, and here's the thing. They've been playing so much more 12 personnel now. They haven't had a slot receiver in the game a ton.
Yeah.
So if you're going to play that 12 personnel with Ingram and Ellison, then Shepard has to be an outside guy, right? Or then do you use Ingram as a slot receiver like Jeff seemed to suggest?
That's what I seem to think you need to do.
I think there's some challenges now with the coaching staff when they decide how to use Shepard when he gets back.
And challenge is the word.
Right.
I mean, for the last 2 weeks, it's been a challenge. People don't understand, you guys do, that the ramifications of that game when those guys all went out at the same time, and when you had four of your guys go down, that is a depletion. I mean, you don't have the depth at any position when you have four guys go down like
it's
that.
It's nearly impossible to recover from that in a season.
Huge void to have.
Huge void. I mean, yeah, one, maybe two, but four? That's tough.
Before
tough.
I know we're going to break down the rule book, wanted to add a few things to what Jeff
was alluding to
earlier. What you pointed out to me, going back to the Denver game versus the Seattle game, it's almost as if the Giants are at the point where everything has to go ideally right for them to win a football game.
It has to go ideally right, and you know it's not going to be perfectly right. It's going to be sloppy kind of right.
Correct, but it's got – but meaning that you need the defensive –
no
score,
question.
Or you need a huge takeaway. You need special teams to change field position.
And they had the one takeaway in the first half, which gave them their one score.
Which did, but notice that's the only thing that showed up in the scoreboard.
Correct. Yes.
So they essentially, a short field was the only way they got into the end zone yesterday because they only had 177 total yards, struggled to run the football, struggled to convert on third downs.
Short field. Tip punt. Give the ball them to the 50-yard line.
So that's
another
that cancels
short field.
Out, but that helps out the opposition.
Absolutely.
And that's what we saw a lot of yesterday. Seattle had a tremendous advantage in starting field position because of some of those special teams mishaps. The other thing that Seattle did effectively, I thought, was they were much more well-disciplined in the trenches than Denver was last week. Giants had no double-digit runs yesterday. Not one.
Nine was their longest
run. That was it.
Run.
That was the longest run. Hell, if you want to take it a step further, the longest play for the Giants yesterday was Landon Collins'
return
on the fumble. I'm not trying to make jokes.
The longest play was what? The Ingram had a 23-yard catch and run, if I'm not
the
mistaken?
The longest catch
I have right here.
For
on,
the
I
Giants.
29.2. Oh.
Longest was 25 for Ingram.
25.
And that was the Ingram play,
yes.
Right?
So
that was a pass by that was completed about 2 yards past the line of scrimmage, and he ran
and then
for
he ran for the
yards,
extra.
Right.
So, in truth, the Collins was, if you examine it from where he recovered the fumble to what he did with it after, was the longest play because it was a 32-yard return.
And, Lance, I want to get back to your field position point. I'll ask both you guys a little trivia question here. Every other drive, the Giants started on their end of the field, right? The Giants' average starting field position in this game, by the way, was their own 23-yard line. And I didn't do the math, but keep in mind, it's still the Giants' 23-yard line. That's including the possession they started on Seattle's 17. So if you take that play out of the mix, their average starting field position was probably
inside,
around their own 17, 18-yard line. Maybe even their own 15, okay?
What was the Seahawks, by the way?
Own 34. So that's a big difference.
17 yards.
So, but here was my question for you guys. Other than that possession where they started on Seattle's side of the field, how many drives did the Giants drive from their side of the field? Did they even get into Seattle territory?
I'm gonna guess it was the field goal. So that they that drive that they did the field
that
goal.
That was one. And then the only other drive they got into Seattle territory was the drive at the end when they turned it over on downs.
Right. At the
That's
end of the
how
yeah.
much the Giants struggled to move the football, that they could not get into Seattle territory more than twice on their own volition of the offense, not including the one takeaway. Well, and one was a garbage time drive where Seattle's playing, you know, not a prevent defense, but they're obviously,
third
you know,
down.
Not exactly.
The
third
mindset
down.
Changes
I mean, and you
at that
saw
point
it
of the game.
Early in the game, guys, Seattle had their linebackers in goal line depth.
Oh, yeah, they were
they
stacked the whole
yeah.
game. So they're
Absolutely.
Stacked. And because you know what they said? Yeah, you guys ran the ball great against Denver last
Watch
week.
This.
You know what?
You're not doing
that's
that
your
against
game
us.
Plan. Well, go ahead. Yeah. Because you want to know something? If you can run the ball against us, way to go. You're probably going to beat
Congrats.
Us.
Yeah.
But if you can't, you're not going to beat us with the guys that are on the outside.
Right, exactly.
Or at least
yeah.
try to do that.
Yeah,
meaning give Eli the opportunity, just like he went after Tavares King. And you know what Richard Sherman said? Oh, I'm just going to reach out and tap that ball away. I mean, he made it look pretty easy.
Yeah, he did.
Come on.
But
did
it
he
was
not?
A great play.
No, it was a great decision by Eli in terms of extending the play. That's not what I'm criticizing. But Richard Sherman, King's got a step on him, and Sherman just tapped the ball out like it was nothing.
I know.
And that's the thing. And I thought the Giants, like I said earlier, I thought in the first half they actually, given the way the Seahawks game planned against the running game, I thought the fact that the Giants were getting even 3 yards per carry against that type of front actually wasn't bad. I thought Darko and Gallman did a good job of, you know, hitting the line. And in those situations when they have that many guys there, you can't dance. You can't pitter-patter.
No.
You got to hit it quick, and you got to fall forward and get the tough yard. Because you're not going to get clean yards in that situation. You have to get dirty yards. And I thought they did a pretty good job getting those dirty yards, whatever
and,
it's worth.
And when you go back to the third downs, third and two, third and fours, third, I mean, those are such critical plays in a game when you can't run the football and you're getting some positive yards on the first two downs, but that's just a change of pass. Now you got to punt it away.
All right, 3 and outs. A lot of 3 and outs.
Ready to break down the rule book now for a second?
Oh, God.
All right,
this
here
is,
we
okay.
go.
I heard, by the way, I heard both of you on my way home last night discussing this play.
Yes.
Okay.
Did we explain it well, do you think?
Absolutely.
Okay, so I will try to explain it well now, the same way I did on the radio last night. All right, here we go, folks. And obviously the play I'm sure a lot of people are going to call up about. I don't want to make the whole show about it, but I'll try to address
it
now.
And I have it up, by the way, too.
So here we go. After that Eli Manning sack fumble, it was still only 10-7. Mm-hmm. So the Seahawks took over on the Giants' 38-yard line, and on the first play from scrimmage, they ran a flea flicker play. It was well-designed. And Russell Wilson hit an open receiver, Paul Richardson. He underthrew him a little bit. Richardson goes up to try to grab the football. He has it for a moment. Landon Collins makes a nice play, gets his hand in between Richardson and the ball, and it comes loose. They crash down to the ground. They both fight for it, and it's called a simultaneous catch, and the Seahawks get the touchdown. Now, I will read to you what the referee said to Tom Rock, who was the pool reporter for the media after the game, and this was his statement. I will read it word for word, folks, okay? The receiver went into the air, had control of the ball, lost control, regrasped the ball, and at the same time he regrasped it, the defender grabbed the ball also, hence simultaneous possession. That's my words, not his. They went to the ground simultaneously with the football. Then they started a little wrestling match. It's over now. It's over. The catch is established. So I'll defer for a moment here from his words. I'll get back to him in a second. The fact that Landon Collins eventually winds up with the football is immaterial. It does not matter, okay? Getting back to what the official said. If the defender were to pull the ball out of his hands then, it's still a catch because the defender has a second action. At that point, when they are on the ground together and tussling to begin with, the catch is over. That's the touchdown. Now, after that, is when he rolled over, and we don't have any clear view of quote-unquote anything happening after that, so that's where it stands. Tom Rock followed up. So he landed on top of the defender. They both had the ball. They were on the ground. That's a touchdown. The referee answers, that's a touchdown. So basically, folks, what the officials say is that on the way down to the ground, or when they initially both hit the ground together, that's when simultaneous control of the ball happens.
They both shared it.
Which is right here, which is the image. I know the audience is not seeing it.
Correct.
The two of them have their backs on the bottom of the end zone, and they both are sharing the football right there.
Correct. And that – and both players don't have to be in bounds there, by the way. Only one has to be in bounds.
Okay.
But the bottom line is both happen to be in bounds there, and that's when simultaneous possession happens, and it's a touchdown. Now, my – and I'm not going to reference the picture because the audience can't see it. My argument would be – is that neither player has control of the ball there yet because they're trying to pull it back and forth and it's still moving around. Obviously, the replay booth and the official thought otherwise. They thought even though the ball was moving between the two players, both players had two hands on it and
correct.
That would constitute possession with the ball in bounds. And that's why it's a touchdown.
Well, and I don't think there's enough evidence to overturn that under those circumstances that you're alluded to. And the ref, Tony Corrente, used the term wrestling match, right? I mean, that's what he referred to, that it was a back-and-forth tug-of-war. And once that occurs and then they roll out of play, the play is over. He specifically says,
correct.
It's done. It's over. Everybody keeps bringing up and arguing, you know, Richardson steps out of bounds. What the official in the rule book is saying is once they're tied up together on the ground, it's over. The play's done in their mind in terms of their interpretation of the video.
Right. Well, and I won't even reference it in terms of the play. The rule is once both players show control of the football and simultaneous control, what happens after that is immaterial.
Irrelevant, yeah.
The question, and I think this is something that is open to interpretation and a fair questioning of the play, is when does that simultaneous control actually occur? And I think the officials on the field in the replay booth believed it happened very early in them coming down from the ground and
right
hitting
there.
The ground.
Right here. I mean,
well,
it's,
and again,
it's essentially...
the fans can't see
well, of course,
see
I know. But, it's an image
yes.
of what I'm describing is it's the two guys with their backs
on
the
ground,
end zone.
With both with their hands on the
correct.
Ball.
Correct, and they are both sharing it.
See, now, to me, that ball looks like it's still moving around there. So I'm not, in my opinion, I'm not sure if that's total control. Again, I'm not saying there's enough evidence to overturn the call on the field. I'm not sure if there is either. I agree with you with that, Lance. But I think there is a fair question as to whether or not both players had control of the football by the time Richardson's foot hits out of bounds. I'm not sure that they do. I'm not sure that they don't, which is why there was not enough evidence to overturn it. Remember,
it's gotta be conclusive.
He said he did not say this play was confirmed. He said the play stands, which indicates maybe that just meant there wasn't enough evidence to overturn it.
And that's usually
right.
the rule of thumb in the NFL. If there's not enough evidence to overturn it, then they are told that they're not going to then change the call. And, right. you know, what you pointed out, John, and we could say this about every single call, it's written in the rule book. The refs in the league are interpreting the written rule. There's a big part of interpretation in terms of when you look at
sorry.
A rule and then you look at the video image. So, I mean, I think fans need to understand that. You know, we could sit here and go back and forth. I could show this to 10 different people.
You're
and they're
going to
tell
answers.
Me that joint possession of the football happened in this corner of the end zone. No, it didn't happen until he rolled over three
right.
times. It didn't happen until he
yeah.
looked at his opponent in the eyes. It's the interpretation of the legal.
And I'll say this. If this play happens in the middle of the end zone, to me it's a clear simultaneous catch and the call is right. The question is that the sideline gets involved and
yeah.
when possession happens as opposed to when he hits the sideline.
Well, they're saying that possession happened here.
Well, correct. Correct.
So what does it matter if it's here or over here?
Well, no, but my point is that it wouldn't matter when possession happened if it's in the middle of the field because the sideline's not even
okay.
involved. You know what I
yeah,
mean?
Yeah.
But the bottom line is it was called a touchdown. That was only first down. Under no circumstance, at least in my opinion, could that have been ruled an interception because the ball is never out of Richardson's hands.
Of course.
And
so you're going to look at the other way around it. What could it have been an interception? I don't think it could have. Could it have been a touchdown? Now
yes,
they both have it, yes.
It could have been incomplete.
Incomplete, yeah.
Yeah, or incomplete. So, and if I had to do the top three, the bottom one is there's not an interception. It's a touchdown or an incomplete pass. How do
I
they call it
you.
An incomplete pass here, though? How would they call that an incomplete
if,
pass?
The way this could be an incomplete pass, Jeff, is if they rule that the ball was still bouncing around and in no one's possession by the time Richardson's foot hit out of bounds.
But because they said there was simultaneous possession in this frame, nobody's seeing it.
Before the touching of the right line. Gotcha.
With both players on the ground in the end zone, that's why it's a simultaneous catch. And it's a really tough call to make.
And it's real time when they're making this call. And you saw the guy, the referee, and I'm sorry you guys can't see this, but at the end of the play, the referee over here is the one that ran, who was in the back of the end zone, the referee who ran all the way around. He's the one that went like this for
because
the touchdown.
He looked to see he saw whether underneath or not Richardson, where it was. Had at least a piece of the football.
And Richardson did have his two hands on the ball nearly the entire time.
He did.
Exactly.
The first one that went up.
Correct.
And aggressively pursued the football. The other thing that I wanted to just point out is clarification, because this goes back to it's Rule 8, it's Item 5. We tweeted it out, a number of us, last night. If anybody wants to read it. But what it specifically says is, and this is what you were pointing out with what Tony Corrente was inferencing, the fact that once Richardson has joint possession, Collins can rip it out, but it makes no impact on the play. Because under those circumstances, the offensive player always gets the tiebreaker or the edge, and that is based on the written rules there. So I know that that's a confusing aspect. But once the offensive player goes up, catches the football, even if he bobbles it, he retains possession, then the defensive player can rip it out. Play's over by then.
And I guess I could ask this question and maybe save a question for one of the callers. Is it when will the league rule on something? Would they come back with an explanation here and say, you know what?
I imagine the league will probably release a video at some point this week. I mean, there's no guarantee. They could do whatever they want. They're not under any obligation to do anything, but I imagine they'll release something.
They usually do a good job with controversial plays where they send out a video every week. I think actually the Twitter handle is NFL operations or something to that degree, and they usually do a nice breakdown of 3 minutes worth of content, and they pick about three or four highlighted plays each week. So listen, the Sterling Shepard play was one of the plays included that week.
Three yards out of bounds. He's got control and runs through, and then
the issue
not a
was
catch.
Though he was in the act of going to the ground.
Yes.
Then that's the big thing.
If you're on Twitter, by the way, it's at NFL Football Ops, all one word on Twitter, and you see they have an officiating video from yesterday already. I don't think this is going to include. This is from the Tennessee and Indianapolis game from Monday night. It's nothing from
this.
Well,
no, they included more plays. You got the Steelers and the Chiefs. Now, that came out just out of curiosity. That was
October 22nd. So that's yesterday that came out.
So they waited. They waited
till Sunday.
Pretty
that's why
late.
I was surprised.
But if I recall, the week that the Shepard touchdown, non-touchdown happened, that was out, I want to say, by about Wednesday.
Okay.
So I think so it could
be out. Well, it just depends on what's on their calendar that
exactly,
week.
Exactly.
I mean, they might have some lunch dates in there.
Absolutely.
You know, some
got
other
a lot
things.
Of issues on their play. All right,
so I know we took a long time in that play, but hopefully that answered some of your questions before you called up with them. So now let's get to your calls. We'll take them the rest of the way at 201-939-4513. I want to make sure we get a lot of people in today, folks. So if I'm a little short, I apologize. So if you have a main point you want to get in, just make sure you get it in first, okay? Let's go to Adam in New Jersey. He's up first. Hi, Adam.
Hey, guys. It's Kenny in New Jersey.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kenny. Go ahead.
Yeah, no problem. I just heard the click, so I was like, oh, they must mean it's me.
Yeah, it is.
how are you guys doing?
I'm doing great, Kenny. Right. What's up?
An exciting headache yesterday. I'll try to be as fast as possible.
Sure.
Giants fans, including myself, are at their wit's end. We just are. And it's not – I mean, last year in Philly, Sterling Shepard on a fourth down play has his arm pinned behind his back. No call.
That was a bad call.
Two touchdowns in Philly this year. Both ruled touchdowns, Sterling Shepard at the end of the half.
I disagree with you, Kenny.
Both ruled touchdowns, both overturned.
No, Kenny, I will agree with you on the call last year. Sterling Shepard was absolutely interfered with, but according to the rule, Sterling Shepard did not complete the act of the catch in that game against Philly. He did.
That was textbook rule.
I'm not even talking about the second one. The first one, he crossed the goal line. They only showed it once to us at home, and they refused to show that angle again. That on his second effort, he crossed the goal line before he hit.
Well, he's talking about the one in the right corner of the end zone. It was an awfully close call. I thought you were referring to the second one. To me, was the right call in terms of him catching it and then falling to the ground.
The second one shouldn't even have happened. But other than that, I mean, refs are determining the outcomes of the game. We can say that now. Obviously, it's happening all over the league. It's not just happening to the Giants. Now, you can call that catch in the end zone yesterday a touchdown. You can call that catch an incomplete pass. You can call that catch an interception. But what you can't call it is a catch. Nobody in this league apparently knows what a catch is. The rule in the rule book is too confusing. They have to – something needs to be done. There's no consequences for referees coming in and wrecking a game. I knew the way this game was going to go. The second they put 25 seconds back on the play clock for Seattle in the first quarter, as soon as that happened, I knew how to play was how the game was going to go.
Well, no, though, Kenny, the reason the ball got kicked around. No, but
there,
Kenny, the reason they had to put 25 seconds back on the play clock on that particular play is that they forced him to take Tyler Lockett out of the game because he whacked his head on the turf on the prior play, and they had to put him through concussion protocol. So they forced him out of the game and forced Seattle to make a substitution. That's why they put the 25 seconds back on the play clock there.
Okay, well, then that one's my bad. But I'm at my wit's end, man. This is ridiculous. It's hard enough for this team to win games without having to play the referees, too. The referees get zero consequences for their actions. I think they should limit the amount of flags they're allowed to throw, and then maybe they'll use them wiser.
I think that's taking it to the extreme.
Thanks for the call, buddy. We appreciate
it. And I understand his frustration. I mean, the rule book is, what, like 400 to 500 pages long? Do you know how many dissertations are within this rule book?
And look, here's the thing. I mean, I think in that situation, the officials did follow the rules in the books. I mean, look, a simultaneous catch is going to be a tough play. Frankly, it might be the toughest play to officiate in the rule book.
Yeah.
With both guys coming down with the ball at virtually the same time.
And why they put the rule in there, because it's so difficult to determine. So that something has to
give
here. They need
some guidelines.
Yeah, exactly.
In baseball, the tie at the base goes to the runner. In football, the tie, the catch goes to the offense. It's the same concept.
Yeah. And remember, this was an issue that came to the forefront with replacement officials in 2012 when Golden Tate and M.D. Jennings of the Packers were in the end zone. It was a different play. There were a lot more activity in terms of the end zone.
Well, same rule, though.
But it was the same exact rule.
Same
team. Same team indeed. Seattle and simultaneous catches. They go hand in hand, apparently.
201-939-4513. Joe in Pennsylvania is up next. Hi, Joe.
Hi, guys. Great show. Very disturbing about yesterday again. The main thing of the game was, again, without a doubt, is the three and outs and you know, just burning out our defense. And, you know, I'm disgusted by the missed field goal, the kicking game, and the block punt, you know, that shared in it there. And
didn't help.
Know, and it's the short passing, too, and every other team's going to play us this way here. You know, why not with our receivers? And you can see how Eli's very frustrated, too. And I was just looking ahead, and like I said, a lot of this stuff was last year, too. You know, it just seemed like they just on you and challenge you and these short passes. I love Eli, and I want him there, but you don't might like this here. But I want to get a running quarterback to come in there to mix this up or something like that. Because now if you flopped the quarterbacks in that game, do you think it would have came out different?
No, I don't, Joe, only because if you throw Russell Wilson out there with a bunch of receivers that's barely played NFL football, I think he would have had the same issues Eli Manning would have had, to be honest with you.
Well, then I'm just saying that, but he made the difference, I think, when extending that them plays. I really do.
He does that every single game, Russell Wilson and his ability.
I understand that. And this is what I'm saying. I want Eli. Eli's going to be here the next couple of years. I want him there. But when we're being challenged like this, I really like to have a running quarterback to come in there and mix this up once in a while, unless we can come up with some very good offensive linemen to control this. You know, it's one or the other.
Thank you, Joe.
That's the way I look at it. You might not like it, but if we can't have the offense and the offensive linemen and they're stacking against us and not having no chances, I want to mix it up with a running game. That's all I can say. So,
all right, Joe.
Because I said we went through a lot of this last year and next year. I don't know what you think about it, but I see nothing else
because if
we don't get the offensive line going, then we have to have some kind of running game or give us more time just to break it up now and then and bring Eli back in here. So thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it. Look, and here's the dilemma, and I want to get your guys' take on this too. This is how I see it, okay? You got to run the football, right, because you got no wide receivers. Other teams know you got to run the ball. You got to run the ball because you got no wide receivers, okay? Or you're down to your 5th, 6th, and 7th wide receivers when the season started, okay? So they stack the line of scrimmage, okay? And they get a press man on your wide receivers. Well, then what do you got to do? All right, well, we got to try to beat these guys down the field, right? In order to beat these guys down the field, what do? You got to take 5 or 7 step drops. And, oh, No, hold on a second. Our offensive line doesn't hold up long enough to block these defenders long enough to play 5 or 7 step drops. Well, then you got to do the short passing. Oh, no way, but they're pressing our wide receivers, and they got all the guys at the line of scrimmage. Where's the answer? I mean, you keep – there are counters to everything,
yes.
Jeff.
Yes.
But eventually you get to the point where it's like, can we pull any of that off given what the situation is on the field?
You have to somehow try.
You got to run the ball against stack fronts. Is that pretty much the answer?
You also, and it's funny you segue, because I'm looking at this passing zones. Mm-hmm. Look at the passing zones of 10 yards or more for Eli yesterday. 0 for 1, this is the middle, middle. Okay, come over here. Look at 10 or yard. Look at this.
Yeah, so basically Eli Manning, Wilson, between 10 and 20 yards in the air, was a combined 1 for 6 throughout the game, and 0 of 3. 20-plus yards. Russell Wilson, on the other hand,
look at that,
was 2 of 6 on 20-plus yard passes and 6 of 9 on passes between 10 or 20 yards.
So,
it's a great chart, Jack.
And when you bring up this, it pretty much, if I didn't tell you about a football team, you look at this and you say,
who won?
Who won? And we're like, what's going on here? I mean, well, it tells you have no wide receivers. It tells you have nobody that will run 10 yards or more and catch a pass. Now, you go over here, a lot of these passes over here were not straight pocket passes. These were passes that Russell Wilson is known for getting out of the pocket and making plays. By the way, this one other one here with the one touchdown, that was a trickery play.
That was a flea flicker. Yeah. By the way, I think the defense line actually did a decent job containing him. I don't think he
got 10 yards running yesterday.
Yeah. For 10 yards.
And I don't think he created a ton of time really outside and threw these deep passes down the field. I thought the Giants generally handled his mobility fairly well. I thought where the Giants kind of got hammered a little bit was when he threw on time, dropping back. He hit a couple of Jimmy Graham down the seam on that one
Jimmy
play.
Jimmy Graham dropped one of them down the field, too.
He hit the touchdown when he beat DRC. That was on a blitz. He kind of just threw it up and lobbed it over the head right away.
Yeah.
And then the touchdown pass to Tyler Lockett that got called back because of offensive pass interference. Wilson took a hit. When he looked up, he was coming up from the ground to determine that it was even a touchdown.
Oh, he
initially
just flung that ball up there.
Yeah, so, I mean, he got pressured. I agree with you there, but he was extremely efficient, though, even when he had pressure.
And we talk about the defensive line play. The defensive line for the Giants had that offensive line for Seattle rattled. Those guys were jumped. They were a lot of penalties on that offensive line.
They were yelling
personal
at each
fouls
other and stuff.
On offensive linemen for the Seahawks.
Though, I got to tell you, that one called on Glowinski, that was a nice little exaggeration,
was
I thought,
it?
On the contact. Because honestly, I only saw it once quick. I have to look at it again. It looked like the Giant player was kind of approaching Glowinski to maybe try to hit him, and Glowinski saw him and kind of just gave like a get away from
forearm
me forearm.
Shiver.
And then as soon as he hit the Giant just went, oh,
he
and he fell down.
Yeah.
Exactly. But you know what? That's smart.
That's
and
what happened.
Glowinski was the dope that – and here's the thing. He went high.
Yeah.
And
that's the
once
problem.
You go high with the elbow towards
you're
the
done.
Helmet area, you're finished. And that's why he got the – it was the right
always,
penalty.
And they're
the
always
going to
get the second guy. They're not going to get the first guy who
right.
baited him.
Well, and frankly, Glowinski actually had his head on a swivel. The Giant player never actually got a hit on him. Glowinski saw him coming and did like the World Wrestling Federation high bow to the face and knocked him down. One other thing on what Joe said, guys, and Lance, I know we talked about this yesterday too. People like to kill the offense for the three and outs, and that's why the time possession problem is there. Guys, this is on the defense too. You have to get off the field at some point. And you guys talked about the drive, and I want to get the details on it really quick because it was endless. In that second quarter, it was – it was the first quarter. It was the second drive.
The 16 play.
And I want to get that drive coming up right here. And they got the Seahawks off the field after only – 2 first downs on the Seahawks' first drive, but they still managed to kind of pin the Giants back.
Yeah, I mean, I have it up right here in terms of this 16-play drive.
Yeah, how long was it, and it started where and went to where?
It was 16 plays, 89 yards, 843. They started at their own 10.
There it is. I got to hear
it. And then, obviously, they went all the way down to the Giants' 1.
8 minutes and 43 seconds. Get off the field.
Well, but here's the crazy part of this drive.
They had him in a second and 20, didn't they, on this drive, if I'm not mistaken?
Drive, no,
or was
I don't
that
think
the first
this
drive?
Was the lengthy. I think that may have been earlier or later in the game. Most of these were manageable.
Okay.
But here's what jumped out to me. The Seahawks faced one third down before they got into the red zone. So it wasn't a matter of the Giants couldn't get off the field on third down, Jeff.
It was
a matter
they
couldn't make first down and second down stops.
Yeah, it was the Seahawks' first drive in the second quarter. This is what I was talking about. The Giants had them in a second and 13 and then in a second and 20. And they let the Seahawks convert. They got all the way down to the Giants' on that drive, let's see, 35-yard line. Then they committed a false start penalty, intentional grounding penalty. They ended up punting. But that was another 3 minutes off the clock there because the Giants let them convert. You have a team in second and 20. You cannot allow them to convert a first down. You just can't.
Yeah, that's a backbreaker. That's a big backbreaker. You win on first down. And then you can't win on second. Then you forget about third. Second and where is that? Did you
second
have
and 20.
Second and 20? Right
at
here.
Their own eight, by the way.
Yeah.
And that would shift field position. If you get the stop there, that shifts field position. You're going to get the ball around midfield. Instead, the Giants got the ball on their own 14-yard line on the next drive.
Yep.
And that changes what you can do. And where Russell Wilson actually did well a few times, he actually would run up the middle and he threw like some really quick short passes rather than the ones down the field, which he likes to throw on the move. And that was something a little bit different that we hadn't seen from him on tape.
Well, and off of that point, I think what the Seahawks did effectively is after those short passes – they would gain yardage after the catch.
They would, yes.
And that was an issue we talked about earlier in the season where the Giants were missing tackles. I thought that came back a little bit, much more than we saw in Denver. Denver was non-existent.
I'm not sure I saw missed tackles, but they definitely did have running right after the catch.
Meaning guys being in position to at least make the tackle and then dancing going on by Seattle to get out of
it. I'll show you a little statistic. This is the fun part of the program. You look at the punting statistics, okay? You have Ryan – John Ryan, 5 punts, 5 inside the 20s. You look at Brad Wing, 7, 1 inside the 20. There's your field position.
That's great.
5 out of 5 punts inside the 20.
And by the way, here's another one too, Jeff, which you don't like as a punter. If you're not trying to punt it inside the 20 and you only have a 38.4 average –
That's because the one block kick was a 20-something yard.
I forgot about the block kick.
And believe me, I only even know that because I've been there.
I forgot about the block
in that department.
I forgot about the block kick. It's a good point.
So
you can relate.
Good point.
Yeah.
Let's go to Jeff in Maryland. Jeff, you're up next on Big Blue Kickoff. Hi, Jeff.
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're good, Jeff. What's up?
Yeah, I just want to get to the point as far as things. I know you guys are busy. Basically, there's been no consistency in all aspects as far as the Giants, as far as defense, offense, and their running game. The other thing is that in 1966, the last time we had a record, well, we were 1-12-1. We got a tough schedule coming up, 7 games. I see us winning probably 2 out of the 7. We have the Rams, the 49ers, the Chiefs, the Redskins, the Raiders, the Cowboys, and the Eagles. I think it's time for Ben McAdoo to go, and I don't know what's up with Eli because it seems like when people get next to him, he just drops. He just falls. So this is just my opinion. I just want us to be better and want us to win next year and just keep it real. That's it. I mean,
Jeff, I'll say this real quick. If you want Eli Manning gone, you're not going to win next year because that means you're starting a rookie quarterback. So you can't have it. But if you want to try to win next year, Eli Manning's your quarterback. If you don't, then you can make a move if you want. But if you want to win next year, Eli's got to be here. So it's one or the other. It's not
Ben.
Both.
Ben McAdoo. I mean, I wasn't a fan favorite of him when they hired him anyway from last year. And you know, I heard you guys last week talk about it. You were asking people. So, I mean,
that'll be a decision.
I know right now it's a rebuilding.
No, we don't have to make.
I know that we dug ourselves in the hole from players getting hurt, which is true.
That'll be a decision, Jeff, that the owners make at the end of the season. That we have nothing to do with.
There's not been no consistency. That's, you know, we could sit here and, like I said, you could put, you can go say the other team has this, that, boom, 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 but there's not been consistency with our team. And I love the Giants, you know, to the T. I just want us to bring that Super Bowl to New York, you know, and have a really good season in what we're struggling and everything that's going on right now.
Thank you, Jeff.
That's
appreciate
all
it,
Jeff.
Buddy. And look, and I'll say this too about Ben McAdoo and Mike Sullivan, who called play. By the way, I don't see anybody calling up and saying, "Oh, the call and plays change fixes everything." See, it's not that simple, folks. It really isn't. And I don't care who your offensive coordinator is or what offense you're running. If you have any wide receivers, it ain't going to work.
Well, and listen.
It ain't going to work.
And even Ben said it after the game. You know, it's not one guy. It's not Eli Manning. It's not the receivers. It's everybody.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Right.
And I wish we could get this, but we never will. I would love to just somebody hand us the grades because the coaches grade the players. They grade the players on mental mistakes and missed assignments, things like that. I would love to see the grading of some of these. And sometimes it's worse and sometimes it's better than you think. I mean, you come out of a game. Some people have Eric Flowers as what – I know Dotz does. He has whatever his grading system is. But a lot of times you'll think that Eric Flowers had a bad game, but the coaches are giving him a good grade. We don't know the ins and outs of all of it.
You know how in the movies you got, like, the crazy guys that have all, like, the drawings on the walls and the numbers and the equations?
Something like this?
That's Paul Dottino's grading system right there. Yeah.
Connecting lines and dots.
Exactly.
It's something that he's the only one that can understand
first of all.
It's encrypted somehow, some way.
You do not want to travel into that.
That's deep. You might get lost in there.
201-939-4-5.
You may need psychological help after
1-3. You might, exactly. Let's go to Charles in New Mexico. He's up next. Hi, Charles. Good to hear from you, buddy.
Hey, buddy. How you guys doing?
Good, Charles. What's up?
You know, let's just face it. I mean, there's going to be a cleaning of the house at the end of the season.
We don't know
that.
We
brought in all the wide receivers for Eli and all these guys that say Eli drops when somebody's around him. What do they want him to do? He was about to throw the ball in that one play, and he got clocked and he fumbled, you know? The guy tries to protect the ball. He's got to be there next year. We need some offensive linemen. I know the guy mentioned what's coming up in the schedule. To me, living in New Mexico, being a diehard Giant fan for 45-plus years, we got to beat the Raiders and the Cowboys. It's all that matters. But if we don't...
How about the Cardinals?
Sandwiched right in between.
It's only Charles' priorities.
Back from Penn State, and we need some offensive linemen, okay?
Yeah.
And the future could look bright, right? I mean, I love following you guys. You guys do a great job. I mean, just it just seems to me they were in the game with 7 minutes left, and like you guys said, the defense was gassed. They really were.
No question.
And what is Eli going to do? Those guys are not open. You want them to force an interception so we can hear everybody cry.
Oh, no, and Charles, you're right, Charles. Those guys, it's not like Eli was missing open wide receivers now. I mean, they were blanketed. Blanketed.
Oh, yeah. They were blanketed, and you know, what do you want him to do? He's playing with a lot less talent than he started with.
I'll say it plainly. Odell Beckham Jr. is a special player. He is one of the best players at his position, at any position, in the National Football League. When you take a player of that caliber off the field for any organization on any team that's that good, you are going to see a huge difference on the field. And I know, Jeff, you have the player mentality, next man up. There's a reason that guy's the next man and he's not the man.
Well, this is like fourth man up.
Well, it's fifth man up.
It is.
Yeah. It is, yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, brought guys from the practice.
And look, they're all on the team, Charles, and they're all NFL players. I get it. But And I know you didn't say that, so I'm just saying this in general to the fans. There's a reason he's the first man. The first man's better than the fifth man. It's just the way it is.
Without a doubt.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right, but everybody's got to understand. He's working with guys who are on the practice squad.
Correct.
And going out, and Jeff, you made a great point, too. Why go out and pick up those receivers that are still sitting out there? Nobody wants them for a reason, right?
Yeah, and you know what? Why? Why they're not going to – if you go pick up a veteran receiver – let's just call this a guy. I don't know who it is, okay? An 8 to 10 year veteran that's sitting on the streets right now. Why? What if he gets hurt? He's got a more propensity to get hurt than a young guy. I'm just saying. The other thing is they're going to have to pay him more money than a younger guy.
And you're already at 1-6. You want to develop guys at this point.
Exactly.
He's not in your future plan.
Right. That was going to be my third point. There's no plans there.
He's a 7-game rental. Yes. I'd rather – I mean, if
you're
I'm,
contending, then that
well,
might make sense.
Well, that's a different story. But if you're not, which I think is realistic, then you say to yourself, let's see what we have to determine whether or not these are part of our future plans.
Do you want Roger Lewis here next year? Do you want Travis Rudolph?
Travis
is he a future slot guy?
Does Ed Egan have potential and all these other things?
I just want to say one other thing. I enjoy your tweets. I enjoy listening to the show. Still die hard till the end of the season. Like I said, if we win 2 more games, please let us be against the Raiders and the Cowboys.
All right, Charles.
All right,
thank
Charles.
You, buddy. Appreciate the call.
Bye.
Wait, those are going to be an interesting 2 weeks, week 13 and week 14.
It sounds to me like Charles has some neighbors up there.
I was
going to
say, he must.
Like,
he must be feeling the
he's
pressure.
He's sandwiched in between.
Yeah. New Mexico is Cowboys country, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
absolutely.
I guess it's also Raider country, apparently.
Raiders fans are all over the place, too.
Well, especially going to Vegas now, Nevada and New Mexico. Do they border Nevada and New Mexico?
Yes.
They might, right? The southern border of
it's
Nevada.
Four corners.
With the north. Oh, I didn't realize that was one of the four corners.
Yep. New Mexico, Utah, Arizona, and.
Well, if there's anybody that knows that area, it's Jeff.
If anybody knows Southwest geography, it's
I was
Jeff
just
Eagles.
About to bring up a map of the United States just to confirm.
Anyway.
But
four corners.
I was going to say, I have confidence that Jeff knows what
he's
talking
about. There it is, right there. I've actually been in the four corners. You can put four hands – or not four hands.
So it's Utah, Nevada – oh, no, I'm sorry. It's Colorado, Utah, Arizona, New Mexico. So Nevada's not one of the four corners.
Oh, I thought you said New Mexico. I thought you were talking about New Mexico. Never mind.
That's
well,
New Mexico.
We were talking about New Mexico. Yeah.
Four corners. There you go. A little geography.
A little geography lesson, kick off yes. live.
Haas in New Jersey. What's up, Haas?
Hey, fellas. How you doing?
Doing right, well, Haas. Man. What's up?
All right. Well, you know, I called last week, and we were just chatting a little bit and talking. And, you know, I'm really disappointed. And the reason why I'm disappointed more than anything, because I know the team is going to struggle, is that remember I called last week and I said that the receivers needed to win their one-on-one battles.
And what did I say, Haas? I said, Haas, and what did I say? I said, if you're going to need these receivers to be Richard Sherman one-on-one, you're going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
True. Absolutely. I didn't think that they were going to come out and be superstars.
Right.
But I did think that they had their opportunities. Eli missed some throws, and they missed some catches. But, yes, they were blanketed. But, I mean, I don't know what the fans expect. Knowing the team that we had,
right.
You can't expect
That's
us to go on a run the Super Bowl. You can't expect us to do this. I think that they should play Eli in the beginning, and then if the game goes bad, you see what Geno Smith or
Davis
Webb has.
Yeah, Haas, that you know what? I think I think we're a little bit early in the season still, but I think if you're in this situation and they're mathematically eliminated late in the year, would I be surprised if Davis Webb got some regular season snaps? I would not be surprised. Jeff, would you be surprised by that?
I would.
You think any regular season snaps at all, you'd be surprised?
Yes.
Huh, interesting.
Even
I
late in the fourth quarter, though, Jeff?
Mm-mm.
What if the game's lopsided? You don't think that they would maybe try
okay, I'll tell you, it would definitely be fourth quarter, maybe at the end of the game.
I'm with
but
you.
Nothing
no
going
earlier than the fourth quarter.
That.
Yeah, I don't think
because
anything.
I'll tell you why.
I would never say City Line Manning down. That wasn't the point I'm making. I'm saying late in these games, if you have a score situation.
Okay, I misunderstood you. I thought you meant sitting him down.
Completely, no. I wouldn't go there.
Okay, one, because he has a streak that he wants to continue. The two is that you have your best chance to develop your young receivers with an Eli Manning throwing to them rather than trying to see if your younger guy can throw to your younger guys. I don't want to see that.
Go ahead, Haas. Sorry about that.
I absolutely agree with y'all. My point was just that we don't want Eli hurt, even though I'm not the biggest fan of Eli, okay? But he is our quarterback, and he's solid, all right? And he's been ironed. So I wouldn't mess up his streak. But what I would do is just try and add some, you know, the quarterback to give him some other work because we don't want Eli hurt. We need him to continue to play.
Yeah, but, Haas, you can't go into a game worried about injuries because injuries happen. They're a part of the game. Listen, Jeff played a long time in this league. He knows better than anybody. And I mean, look, B.J. Goodson went down yesterday. Cap Cappy went down. Kerry Wynn went down. Justin Pugh. What are you going to do? You're going to start wrapping these guys in bubble wrap? Injuries are a part of the game.
True. You're right, Lance. But my point was just simply, if you see that the game is out of control and you see that because we are bad, let's face it, we're bad. So if you see that the game is out of control, it behooves you to take the star player out instead of continue to send him to the Wolves and our line can't block properly. And you understand what I'm saying?
No, that's fair. I hear what you're saying. No, Haas, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, I do, Haas. Thanks for the call.
But
I think all I want to add
is that I think, though, the game situation has to call for thinking about taking Eli Manning out of the game.
I mean, a blowout.
Yeah, not what Haas is saying about, well, we have to go into a game thinking if the game is not in a position where we could win, now let's rest Eli Manning, let's preserve him, and let's throw in another quarterback. I think if the game flow calls for a lopsided affair, late fourth quarter, you want to give Davis Webb a possession here or there, I could live with that, under any other circumstances.
And also, when we talk about Geno Smith, Geno Smith is on this roster in case there did something happen to an Eli Manning. Going into the season, that's why Geno Smith was here. Geno Smith isn't here to develop into a new quarterback. I really don't, in my opinion, I don't think that's why he's here. It's if in case Eli Manning happened to have a season-ending injury or he couldn't get through, you got a veteran guy because who's the third guy? You got a guy that's never played in the NFL before, so you got to have some experience there. Back to your point, John, and if it's at the end of the game and the game is completely out of hand, okay, but I just don't think we're there yet. I mean,
right.
You know,
I'm talking weeks, you know, 13 to 17.
The last four games of the season.
Let's get there.
The last quarter of the season, if anything, you could have this conversation.
And let me tell you, as much as we all love Eli Manning, and we know he's a competitor, man, the guy, the whole family is freaking, they probably compete who's going to get the last meatball on when you're at the dinner table, for God's sakes. I mean, you're not taking Eli Manning, and if you are going to take him out, he's definitely not going to be.
I think the Manning's more of a steak family than a meatball family. That's just me.
Well, it could be a day that they ate all the steak the day before and there's only some meatballs left.
I'm sure they vary the appetite.
Yeah. Whatever it is, I'm sure it's pretty damn good.
Well, I understood the point you were making, so I was with you there.
All right. No worries.
All right. So we got three callers. We'll try to get all three in. We'll probably go a little bit past one if that's okay with you guys. I want to make sure we get the callers in. Let's go to Omar in Long Island City. He's up next. What's up, Bo?
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for taking my call today.
Thanks for calling in, Omar. What's up?
Hey, listen, guys. You know, I'm a big supporter of the Giants, win highs and lows. And, you know, I just wanted to start preparing for the future at this point. And a couple of things I was looking at is there's been some shuffling on the offensive line. And, you know, Pugh went down against the Seahawks. So it's another thing to consider. And, you know, thinking about Brandon Albert and also the prospect of maybe a Dwayne Brown out there in Houston. Just want to get your thoughts
on Dwayne Brown. I don't mean to cut you off, Omar. Dwayne Brown just ended his holdout today. He reported back to the Texans. And I don't think that they're in a position to get rid of a polished left tackle when they're in a position to win their division and go to the playoffs. So,
and also
I
protect
think
the young quarterback.
Thinking. Yes. I think that's extreme wishful thinking. I'm not going to blame you. I understand where you're going with that. Brandon Albert was actually brought into Seattle. Pete Carroll confirmed this at his press conference earlier in the week. They worked him out, and they didn't come to any contractual agreement. He's been out there for quite some time. There's questions about whether or not his mind is even in football. And I think it goes back to what Jeff said earlier when we were talking about bringing in a wide receiver at this point. If that individual is not in your long-term plans, what are you doing to help your team moving forward? Are you going to tell me that if you bring in a veteran left tackle – and he's going to simply just be a seven-game rental, I don't understand how that's helping the development of your offensive
and
line.
By the way, in this situation, Omar, you don't want to trade a future draft pick when you're in this situation
when you need the draft
for
pick.
Somebody to help you now when you're already at 1-6. That doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
The only time it makes sense is if you are depleted, okay, and you are in a run for
and
something.
You're in a contender. Right?
That makes sense to me. Not this point, no.
Well, you know, when you get to this part of the season and you're 1-6, you just start drawing at straws and trying to reach for whatever
understandable.
You can. And,
now we hear you. Yeah.
So I'm in a position now where I just want to, you know, see these guys play the best football they can for the rest of the season and start to regroup for next year. But thank you so much for taking my call, and I appreciate all the work you guys do. Keep up the great work.
Hey, thanks for listening, watching, and being part of the show, Omar. Jay in Brooklyn's up next. Hi, Jay.
Hey, guys, how you doing, man?
Go ahead, Jerry.
How about those two offensive lines yesterday, huh? two things. One, what kills Giants fans is, as an NFL observer, the league is such an upside-down league this year where literally anyone, outside of a couple of teams, you know, the Browns, stuff like that, anyone has a shot this year.
No, you're right. You're right.
It's unbelievable. And here the Giants stand. It's not even Halloween, and they're out of it. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, it stinks. It stinks. That's parity in the NFL.
Yeah, and if you were, you know, if you got off to just a little bit of a better start at this point, maybe having three wins here, you know, three or maybe four, you still got a shot. I mean, within this, especially the NFC East. I mean, excuse me, the NFC, NFC period.
Yeah, yeah, because right now, whoever that second wild card is in the NFC is completely up for grabs. Completely.
There's five teams in the running for that one. I'm just guessing. That's just my
yeah. Point. I mean, but there's a lot of teams hovering around 500 right now in the
and you
stages.
Make a great point. Is the fact is that there's so much parity in the league, and you as a Giants fan are sitting there going, "My God, if we had just been playing better, we'd still be sitting here having a little bit more fun on Mondays."
Yeah,
right?
Put it this way: right now in the NFC, there's two teams at 3-4, the Cardinals and Bears. There are three teams at 3-3. Two teams at 4-3, and one at 3-2. So there's a bunch of teams that are clogged into that area fighting for that fourth and fifth playoff spots, rather the fifth and sixth playoff spots in the NFC.
And this team here, everybody thought the Bucs were going to be good, better. Look where they're at.
They've gotten off to a slow start. Yeah, there was a lot of hype.
It's not even the record. They're not even a clear favorite. I mean, Atlanta has issues. All these teams, they all have issues, you know? Like, anyway, just one last thing.
Yes.
The one thing I'm a little concerned about going forward, the injuries are horrendous. The Giants going forward, the offense, I'm just worried that the upper management, people who make decisions on this team going forward, this team wasn't lighting the world on fire the first five games of the year with everyone healthy either. So I'm a little – I just want everybody – you know, Odell Beckham is great. The injuries are hurting them tremendously. But we do have to remember this team had offensive issues before the injuries.
No, Jay, I think you're right. I think you have to do two separate evaluations here. I think Thanks for the call, Jay. Appreciate it. I think you make a good point. You have to evaluate what happened after all the injuries occurred, and I think your evaluation process is different. Because of the circumstances on the field with the personnel you have. But I think you also have to do an honest evaluation of what happened in the first 4.5 games before those injuries took place and decide whether or not, okay, look, we were in these games. We were in close games. We didn't win close games.
You were in three games, less than 10 points.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or are there other issues we have to work out? And I think those are two separate evaluations that, you know, ownership, Jerry Reese, but McAdoo will have to make after the year when they take a larger look at the season.
Well, because wide receivers aside, struggling to convert third and shorts with the ground game was present before the wide receivers went down and after the wide receivers
and
went down.
And the defense wasn't getting off the field that they needed before the and that people was got hurt either.
Correct. The second thing I was going to get to, and plus you're getting some guys back on defense, like Vernon will come back after the bye. DRC returns from the suspension. So if those things are ongoing, that I think you can evaluate regardless of some of the lost players.
And Lance, I think, and we said this last week too, or a couple weeks ago rather, I think the disappointing thing in all this for me still, even though Olivier Vernon's out, the rest of your defense until B.J. Goodson got hurt was pretty much intact. I mean, everyone else was pretty much available here, and you gave up 425 yards of offense to, frankly, a Seattle Seahawks team that has a poor offensive line. They don't run the football.
Horrible.
Jimmy Graham dropped one touchdown. He dropped another pass down the sideline for a big gain. And in the first half of this game, even though the Seahawks only had 3 points, they had 222 yards.
They were moving the ball.
It's a lot of yards.
And it's a lot of yards. It's a lot of yards for a team that didn't really do much coming into this game offensively. Look at the scores of their games.
Oh, very low scoring. They were winning with their defense.
They also have the worst
takeaways.
They also have the worst red zone offense in the league, which doesn't help them either.
Yes, oh, you could tell. Could you tell in that game? I'm like, what are they doing
down
here? Some
of their play calling in the
– it was like they were drawing plays up in the dirt.
They're running jet sweeps at like the 6-yard line.
You're talking about on that 16-play drive where they couldn't get in. In fairness, though, when you have one of the worst red zone offenses, it helps when you have the number one red zone defense.
Well, those go hand in hand.
I mean, that was only the fourth touchdown they gave up this season in the red zone.
Yeah. Well, that does help tremendously. Yeah. If you have a good field goal kicker, that helps too.
Final call of the show.
I got a bad feeling about this.
Hallelujah.
Losing his mind.
Mr. Illness.
He wasn't right in the head.
Enough jokes.
I am happy.
You're a madman.
I don't think he's happy today.
Well, he's always happy when he
gets
irritated.
No, he's Mr. Illness.
It's Charlie. How are you?
The lights, the party's over.
See, I told you he's happy.
Oh,
gotta get a
God.
New song, Charlie. Yeah.
Hey, one thing I don't understand is I know you're going to say, well, he isn't going to be part of our plans in the future. But if you brought back Victor Cruz, Eli would have had somebody that he has good chemistry with, who knows where he's going, and not to bring this dude back. And besides, it would be the New York Giants fan base would love the move.
Well, Charlie, I'm
it
sure.
Would bring some excitement.
Charlie.
He would have known where to go.
Charlie.
And you could see that.
Sterling Shepard knows where to go. I don't think they were worried
about
him.
Charlie, none of the three of us know why that Victor Cruz isn't here. But guess what? Tomorrow, Jerry Reese will address the media. And I promise you, a member of the media will ask Jerry Reese why they didn't reach out to Victor Cruz, and then you will have your answer. I don't have the answer for you. I don't know the answer to that.
Well, and Charlie, I'm a little baffled by your recommendation because, you know, your area of expertise is offensive linemen, so I'm a little stunned here.
He's calling for a wide receiver. Why are you bringing him back to there?
Well, I have to. Wait a minute.
You have to call it. No, you have to call him out under these circumstances. I'm sorry. Week after week. No, Charlie. No. Week after week, I have sat here on show after show, the preseason, training camp, the offseason. I want this offensive lineman. I want this guy's third cousin. I want this guy's long-lost relative. And now, 7 games into the season, you want Victor Cruz to return to the team.
Enjoy the change of direction.
I can't. I'm sorry. Because I'm not going to let him go.
We should be bringing in Albert this week. We should bring in Kojo, the guy from Buffalo, the offensive tackle. There was another guy we brought in that we should be bringing in, you know? And the only way – they're going to have to because everybody's going down. Everyone's getting injured. I mean, we still have a big problem on our O-line, and the thing is, there was times when there was third and one or whatever it was, we didn't have Dockwar in there. We had Gallman in there.
Well, you don't like Gallman now?
I don't understand that either. You know, he should have had Dakwa is the running
back.
Charlie,
hold on. 2 weeks ago, I had half the chorus calling up saying Goldman's going to be the rookie of the year, but he's going to run for a million yards. Now you don't want him in the game?
You know what's comical?
Well, maybe you didn't. Plenty of other people did.
He went in the game, but not on a third and one. No, he shouldn't be in the game. Dakwa should be carrying that ball.
Listen, Wayne Gallman against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, which was his first opportunity, was inactive when he was active. Excuse me, he was converting on some of those short yardage situations. If you go back, and I'm going to add to what John was just talking about. What I find comical is last season we're talking about Paul Perkins needs to replace Rashad Jennings. Right? We go in cycles here. Paul Perkins, optimism to start the season. He gets hurt. No more Paul Perkins. Where's Darkwa? Darkwa goes down. Gallman comes in. Gallman's great. Then Gallman, now we want him removed. Then we want Darkwa into the equation. Guys, I give up. And gals as well. I'm sorry. I don't know what to tell you anymore.
And if you go back years, go back to David Wilson.
Exactly. Whatever. I mean,
there's got to be another running back.
There's got to be somebody else that we can throw it to.
Has the most power, and that's the guy you use. That is common sense. I mean, there's so many things.
No, but
I mean,
Charlie,
defense was on the field for like the whole game.
Charlie, real quick. In all seriousness, the way it seemed to me, the Giants were trying to utilize their running backs yesterday was one guy per series. So they would give Darko one series, and they give Gallman a series, and they didn't want to change guys within that one possession. So usually, when one guy started the possession, he would stay in for the entire possession. At least that was my sense.
And Vereen was the change up within that possession.
And again, Charlie, thanks for the call. We got to run.
Bye, Charlie.
Bye, Charlie. We're already past one. Don't blame the offense for the time of possession. Is it partially their three and out? Sure. Defense has got to stop somebody.
No question. Almost 11 minutes of disparity there. That's almost one full quarter of football that defense was on the field for.
6 of 13 on third downs.
Yeah.
It's third downs again and again and again. The defense has got to get off the field on third downs better. But that has been the one thing that's been consistent, except for the game against the Broncos last week.
5 of 17.
Which was a great job. But other than that, in every other game, Lance, this year, issues stopping teams on third down.
I mean, the Chargers were 8 of 18 on third down, and they were converting third and sixes, third and nines,
third and 15s, 20s.
Correct. And they were happening on one drive, by the way, in which the Chargers had three conversions. So I agree with you. That has been a continuous trend that you could point to no matter who's been on the field. I don't want to hear any excuses. It doesn't matter the personnel. They have had trouble getting off the field on third down.
Short, long, intermediate, you name
it. Doesn't matter.
Yeah. Hope you guys had fun today. I know we did.
Tomorrow, good show, huh?
Tomorrow you'll have Russ and Deal. Wednesday you'll have Russ and Paul. You'll have less fun than you had with us, but you'll have fun nonetheless. Thanks so much for joining us. We'll be with those guys next couple of days. We'll see about shows Thursday and Friday. Generally on the bye week, we get shut down and get a couple of days off. We have not gotten that official announcement yet. We're going to be selfish and hope that we do, but we'll find out and let you know. Stay tuned to Giants.com for the schedule. For Lance Beno and Jeff Eagles, I'm John Schmelz. We'll see you tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.